Talk given Friday, 10th March, 1978. If we are serious-minded, and especially if we are deeply concerned with the heart of religion in the sense of living the religious life, we are bound to ask ourselves, what is the purpose of our existence here? And how can such purpose, or purposes, as the case may be fulfilled? In this connection, one of the most important points is our approach to the questions. By our approach to the questions, I mean, are we approaching these questions for the sake of our own self-improvement, for our own perfecting, for our own becoming free of sorrow, of insecurity, of trouble, and so forth? And in connection with this, usually those who are quite serious and sincere forget to look into themselves and find out quite truly whether they live exclusively in the world or inclusively. This is a very important question. And I think that if we do look very carefully, we will be somewhat shocked to discover how exclusively we live. Not inclusively. This exclusive living is due to our natural conception of ourselves as each of us as a separate self. We think of a center within us. We give it sometimes an exalted name, the still center within us, which is the spark of the divine, and so forth. We give it a name like that. But in giving it a name like that, we forget. We are in fact quite unaware of the fact that such a center is actually non-existent, and that this misconception which separates us from the rest of the world is the root source of conflict with the world, the root source of the misapplication of our life energies and efforts. And this very center is the prolific source of our troubles, insecurity, sorrow, and our mistakes in life. See, it is extremely important to look into this. We are so easily self-deceived. And the fact that we are self-deceived where these questions are concerned is proved by our behavior in everyday life and the way we react to everything that happens around us. We are almost incorrigibly self-centered. And the most powerful self-centering comes into being in the name of the Supreme, of God, of transcendence, of perfection, of holiness, and so forth. It may sound a bit surprising, but actually it is not surprising. Because whatsoever is done in the name of that which goes right beyond us calls up an extraordinarily powerful energy from within ourselves, which energizes all our thinking, feeling, speaking, and doing. And being the supreme source of energy throughout the whole cosmos, it energizes the whole of us without taking any sides. It doesn't side with our good intentions as against our bad intentions or selfish intentions. This is a point which the religious very rarely appreciates. It is this ambivalent state of the psyche, this self-centered and extremely self-aware consciousness of oneself, these two together make things go wrong. We have often heard it said, it is not so much the actual doing, it's the motive behind it. If you were to ask practically every one of the people in the world's history who have done the most terrible wrongs, hurt mankind horribly, what their motive was, I doubt if a single one of them would say that their motive was anything but of the very highest and the best. We all know Torquemada, for instance. In the name of what did he commit his horrors? I believe he sent 8,000 people to the stake. in order to save their souls, in order to serve his God. He had no hesitation in declaring his God was certainly the God of love. His Savior was certainly the sinless one who gave up his own life as a ransom for the many. But this is how Torquemada served his God, his Savior, and mankind. And if you are going to be really honest with ourselves, and such honesty is indispensable for living the holy life, we will discover, to our dismay, that we too are not altogether clean. Never forget those wonderful words of the sinless one when somebody came and said, "Good Master," and the sinless one answered, "Why callest thou me good? There is only one that is good, and that is God, the unknown, the invisible, the unknowable. Unknowable as long as one functions in terms of self-concern and self-centeredness. It is only when selfness is totally out of us, then that unknowable becomes the known, not to the brain, not to what we call our own mind, but it becomes known because that unknowable now functions freely, naturally, and spontaneously through us, and we are unaware of the fact that that is just what is happening. That is how we know. In that sense only, one knows by being. Those of you who are interested in the Vedanta, the Brahmanical teachings, you know how Brahman is characterized as Sat, Chit, Ananda. Being, consciousness, some translate it as knowing. I like to use the words awareness or complete attentiveness, which I think psychologically is somewhat more helpful to us, and bliss. The bliss which has nothing to do with pleasure or joy or any of the things which give us a sensation of happiness. But there are no words in any language truly to express, without misleading us in some way or other, that which is transcendence itself. So they characterized it as awareness, being, bliss. And it is this awareness which is totally beyond concept, beyond words, beyond anything that can be formulated and made finite and mortal, therefore, and a source of suffering, therefore. See? That awareness being is that supreme reality for us human beings, constituted as we are now. It's not too difficult to talk about these things, at least for some people, but really to enter into the real significance and the implications of these things is a Herculean task. But unless we do it, however serious we are, however sincere we are, our energies will be misdirected because they are self-centered. Notice the way that we live exclusively and not inclusively. If the weather is not what we like it at the moment, are we being inclusive or exclusive? We want this weather to depart and some other weather to prevail, the sort of weather we wish to have. Not only with the weather, it's a trivial example, but take any field and every field of everyday experience and life, whether our own ambivalent reaction is one of pleasure or one of pain, one of acceptance or one of rejection. In any and every one of them, we are not at home with it. The good old joke, we must have something to worry about, something to grumble at. Otherwise we are miserable. That is to say, we are miserable if we aren't miserable. Man is a strange creature. But come to more serious things. Our relationships with living human beings around us, how easily they go awry, how easy it is for them not to be right from the start. Look into this. Why? We have our own conceptions of an ought to be. We are full of wanting this, that or the other from this person, that person, from the wife, from the child, from the parent, from friends, from the employer, from the employee, and so forth. How can our relationships be right? Now, why do we want like this? Because we are self-concerned and we have a self-conception. I am like this, etc., etc. Which it would be fairly safe to say that with the exception perhaps of a few dozen people, characterizes the remaining 4,000 millions in the globe. You see, to be completely honest with ourselves is not to be ruthless towards ourselves. I don't mean that at all. We have to be truly compassionate. But we can't be truly compassionate to ourselves unless we are prepared to face the actual truth, the actual fact about ourselves. Otherwise, it is just self-pity or our own vanity, egoism and such qualities pampering us and propping up a false image of ourselves. When we have faced all that and seen it, really observed it, really seen it for what it is, an extraordinary thing happens. What we call the evil in us, the ambivalent dual of what we imagine is the good in us, is not destroyed. It is completely cleansed, it is transformed. What is the it there? Like the good in ourselves, the evil in ourselves, both these are the expressions, psychically, first and foremost, and physically also, of our own life energy. This is why there is no such thing as a quick answer to our problems. And in fact, there never is any answer to our problems. There is only one problem, that is, my separate self. If my selfness disappears, pleasure and pain, difficulty, danger, illness, death, everything will come, but it will no longer be a problem. Something twisted, something unresolved, something where the pattern has gone hopelessly astray. We have become entangled within ourselves. You see the importance of getting at the right approach to all these things. What is the purpose of our existence? Or what are the purposes of our existence? There is no purpose as far as one's own view of things and of oneself is concerned. The universe is a universe, a one whole. We say the words, we make a mental construct of those words, and we store it up in the brain. We feel very fine. I know the purpose of existence. We are as foolish as that. I know. The universe is a universe, a one whole total reality, which is primordial creative action, constantly creating, not procreating merely. That is part of the story, but constantly creating. In this creative activity, there emerges out of that one primordial reality, all its countless manifestations. We, constituted as we are able to be conscious of an infinitesimal fragment of it all in terms of shape and form, function and structure, trends of life, and so forth. Now, trends of life. Don't let the evolutionist, the biologist, think, yes, of course, evolution. We know about this. We know something about it. Yes, we do. But be very careful. This knower is an isolatively self-conscious knower. And by virtue of his being isolatively self-conscious, he will inevitably present misleading pictures of this evolutionary process as a purpose of life. The developmental process of this life energy, this creative activity of primordial creative energy, is on such a tremendous scale that if we are honest enough, if we are humble enough, this transcendence itself will open our eyes. And in so far as the psyche is free of selfness, it will operate through us. And we will know only through being it. That means that in terms of concepts and words, we will not know. Transcendence gives no certificate of proficiency to any one of us. It is thy will, not mine, in the grandest and the supreme sense. If you want the Buddhist formulation, it is the unborn, the unbecome, the unmade, which produces the whole of the born, the become, the made. Until the individual self-consciousness, the great conceit, the I am, as the Buddha called it, is out of the picture. That's the same thing, thy will, not mine. One is in a personalistic form, the other is in an impersonalistic form. If you take the Brahmanical presentation, the Hindu presentation, Brahman, the Atma, the absolute all, unimaginable, unthinkable, beyond everything, releases the whole of cosmos out of its primordial state of quiescent creative power and ultimately reabsorbs the whole thing into itself. And it is that which comes to fruition, not you or I. I have said again and again, none of us will enter the kingdom of heaven elsewhere, realize nirvana at another time and another place. That's all the childish, immature product of the mind, or of the psyche, which is still unclean. They are concepts and verbal formulations. if we really see all this clearly, what the world calls life and death, what the world calls success and failure, joy and sorrow, security and insecurity, will all be taken in our stride. Taken in our stride, not by us in the sense of, oh yes, we will triumph over difficulty or evil or sorrow. It's a totally mistaken idea. It will get transformed within us. You and I, each one of us, becomes the crucible of transformation. And that is the wonderful thing about our existence. Provided we let go of all selfness, ask for nothing, and enter into the unknown which is within us, we waste our energies, whether in terms of physical things and exploration and all that, that is to say from the religious point of view, by trying to enter the unknown outside us, the uncharted seas, the unexplored lands. Our egoism, our vanity, our self-assertiveness, a terrible self-assertiveness, a pathetic aggressiveness. The lovely story there is Lucifer aspiring to equality with the Almighty. But this we are allowed to enter if we dare. This we are allowed to enter because this self within, as we call it, better still, recognize it as the psyche, the depths of the psyche, which are hidden from everybody else. That is our sanctum, our adytum. We are allowed to enter that. And if we enter there, and are able to keep the temple, which is the psychophysical organism, truly clean, then transcendence solves everything. Then you will find that the emotional distress of illness, of death, which seems so inconsolable, all that will hurt. The so-called lovely things of life, all that will give pleasure. But this inner poise, which implies this inner cleanness, utter purity, will never be shaken, will never be sullied, never spoilt. And therefore, whatsoever is the supreme, whatsoever we call transcendence or God or Brahman, will never leave the temple. You see? It is in that state that what I have so often called spiritual induction can take place. When the psyche is pure, when the body no longer obstructs, because it is a tamed and a trained psychophysical organism, then this temple can experience the reality of spiritual induction. And this reality is a pure thing. There are so many, especially nowadays, when there is such a strong upsurge of various well-known old techniques and things. Yoga is one of them. It is so easy to say, oh, I received a transmission from on high. I'm in touch with such and such energies of nature, the energies which go by the name of the Suras and the Asuras, the archangels and the angels and the demons and so forth and so forth. This is selfness. Be very, very careful. It's the very devil, the demon inside us. Don't drive out the demon. If you succeed in driving out that demon, you'll be dead physically. Look at him. Understand him completely. Because he contains within himself all your life energy. Just as your guardian angel, these are only symbolic terms, also contains that same energy in totality. Both God and the devil within us contain all our energy. Look into this carefully. It's very important. But one of the purposes, one way of expressing the purpose of our existence is that through this purification, through the release of the dormant energies of the mind, the pure mind, mind itself is always absolutely pure. Psyche is just the manifestation of the universal, pure, unstained mind through us in its own individual form. We have gone into this in past meetings, differentiating psyche from mind. It is convenient to do so, that's why I do it. That mind will function through the psyche and enable this spiritual induction to take place. So that in the midst of any and every circumstance, it is possible for that person to be a center of beneficence in the true meaning to everything around him. Then this transmission becomes a reality in all sorts of fascinating and interesting forms. Otherwise not. Otherwise it's just self-deception. And we spin intellectual cobwebs around that self-deception, make authoritative statements, and the little multitudes that gather around us and form our particular clique sit in astonished worship of the great master who is giving us all the great secrets. Beware. It's so easy to be deceived. I think today it might be useful if we looked into one of the finest forms in which this transmission is expressed.